Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Do you think you are part of that 75%? I really didn't think that I would be, but when asked to list out all the subscriptions I paid for, one or two slipped through the cracks that I totally forgot about. One of which was for something that I swore I canceled forever ago. Think about it. Between streaming platforms, apps, delivery services, and even parenting / kid subscriptions, though they all seem like small amounts, when pulled together, that's a pretty big chunk of your spending money out the door. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting time on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/morningcup. That's rocketmoney.com/morningcup. rocketmoney.com/morningcup. Today's podcast is brought to you by newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird
morning.
Cup of murder.
Even the safest locations can be infiltrated by a monster. On March 25th, 1975, two young girls went missing from an area where parents felt safe letting their children roam and play outside. An innocence that was ripped away at the same moment a pair of sisters made contact with a dangerous man. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Living in a quiet, middle-class neighborhood in Wheaton, Maryland was the Lyons family. A safe area where children played outside without fear. This is where Jay Lyons and his two younger sisters, 10-year-old Catherine Mary Lyon and 12-year-old Sheila Mary Ryan, played with all their friends. With all the parents, like John and Mary Lyon, and neighbors watching out for one another, there was no sense of stranger danger nor any worries that something horrible might touch their idyllic community. That all changed, however, on March 25th, 1975. The Lyon sisters, one in fifth grade and one in seventh grade, were both honor roll students and responsibly kept all their money safely tucked away in piggy banks. So when the first day of their 1975 Easter vacation rolled around, they took their earnings and made the short walk to the Wheaton Plaza Mall in order to look at all the holiday decorations and eat at the Orange Bowl Pizza restaurant just about a half a mile away from their home. Leaving sometime between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m., the pair agreed to be home by 4 o'clock. When the clock struck 7 p.m., however, and the girls were still not home, their parents called the local police, and pretty much immediately, a large-scale search was put together. According to the timeline, which was released to the public in hopes of aiding in the search, the girls left home sometime between 11 and noon on March 25th. At about 1 p.m., they were both seen by a neighbor outside the Orange Bowl speaking with an unidentified male. And at 2 p.m., Jay passed by and saw both of his sisters sitting inside the restaurant, enjoying a pizza together. Between that sighting and 3 p.m., a friend saw the girls walking westward down the street near the mall, in what would have been the most direct route from their home. But when 4 o'clock rolled around, the girls failed to show up like promised, and their families started to worry. That sighting by their friend was the last time anyone saw Catherine and Sheila Lyons, and thus began one of the largest police investigations in the Washington metropolitan area history. Zeroing in on that unidentified man, police started looking for a 6-foot-tall individual aged between 50 and 60 years old, wearing a brown suit and carrying a briefcase with a tape recorder sitting inside. According to witnesses, the Lyon sisters were not the only children seen with the man, and a few were seen speaking into the microphone he was holding, almost as if they were being interviewed. Because he was seen by others, a pretty accurate police sketch was created, and before long, several people came forward saying the unknown man looked a little familiar. Though they didn't know his true identity, they did claim to have seen him a few weeks earlier at the Marlow Heights Shopping Center and at Iverson Mall, approaching several young girls and asking them to read the answering machine message he had typed out on an index card. Though both centers were in the neighboring Prince George's County, Maryland, the police never acknowledged any direct link between the reports and Catherine and Sheila's disappearance. Shortly after they vanished, another friend of the sisters came forward and told police about a long-haired man she saw at the mall that day who allegedly stared at them for so long that she, despite her young age, confronted the adult. She, too, helped to create a sketch of a man who, according to her claims, was a young man in either his teens or early 20s, white, and had a face covered in acne, had scars on his left cheek, and was dressed shabbily. This sketch, however, was never really circulated and was in stark contrast with the description of the other possible suspect in the case. No closer to finding the girls, despite the extensive searches, police spent years combing through call after call and false lead after false lead. Like the several monsters who called claiming that they would return the girls for a price, one of which police and John Lyon set a trap for, but never showed up to claim their bounty. There was also a man named Lloyd Welsh, who, a week after the disappearance, reported seeing the girls the day of their disappearance to a mall security guard, who thankfully called the local police. The police spoke with him and took down his elaborate statement, but after failing a lie detector test, the 18-year-old carnival worker's statements were disregarded as yet another false lead. Then, on April 7th, 1975, about 2 weeks after their disappearance, someone in Manassas, Virginia, reported seeing two girls resembling Sheila and Catherine in the rear of a beige 1968 Ford station wagon. They said that the girls were bound and gagged, and that the driver of the vehicle looked a lot like the sketch of their prime suspect. They said that when the driver looked over and noticed the witness trailing him, he ran a red light and sped down Route 234 towards Interstate 66. Thankfully, before he did so, the witness was able to get a partial number off his Maryland license plate. While they struggled to find the plate number, a small army of mobile citizen band radio users began scouring the area throughout the evening and speaking back and forth with one another in hopes of finding that station wagon. Their attempts, though valiant, were fruitless, as was the search for the license plate number, and though initially treated as credible, the ensuing media storm caused a change, and the witness's statement was deemed questionable by the police working the case. Though the investigation was growing colder by the moment, there was a list of potential suspects that police continued to look at throughout the investigation. People like Fred Howard Coffey, who was convicted in 1987 for the 1979 beating, strangulation, and molestation of a 10-year-old girl in North Carolina, and was given a life sentence after his death sentence was overturned. He, investigators learned, interviewed and obtained a job in Silver Spring, Maryland, just 6 days after the Lyon sisters disappeared, meaning he was just a short distance from the shopping mall, but unable to find anything else to connect him to the crime, Fred was never charged in connection to the disappearance of Catherine and Sheila Lyon. There was also Raymond Rudolph Molesky Sr., who resided in Sweetland, Maryland in 1975, and during a disagreement, murdered his wife and teenage son, injuring another son, inside their home in 1977. And based on his own claims, he might just know something about the Lyon sisters' case. He died in 2004 without giving any viable information. Another potential suspect was a man named John Brennan Crutchley, but like the other two men, there was never enough evidence to warrant an arrest. Though none of these men panned out for one reason or another, it was a fourth man that, when finally looked at as a suspect, police would learn had been involved in the case since the very beginning. In 2013, a team of cold case investigators took over the case and finally got the break that they needed to take a huge leap forward in their investigation. Finding out that one of their witnesses, Lloyd Welsh Jr., had served a lengthy prison sentence in Delaware for child abuse and had a long criminal record that began just a few years after the disappearance, investigators took a fresh look at the man and found something very troubling about his initial statements. You see, Lloyd Welsh, as previously told, came to that security guard with a story to tell about the disappearance that pointed a finger at the well-dressed man holding the tape recorder and microphone. A statement that was made on the very same day that newspapers printed a police sketch and description of their person of interest in the case. He claimed that, on the day the girls vanished, he saw a man who matched the description of Recorder Man speaking with two young girls, and later saw him forcing them into his car. Though this seemed like a solid lead at the time, it all went down the drain when he failed that polygraph test. With the word lied written on the top of his interview transcript, the entire thing was overlooked for the next 38 years. It wasn't until Sergeant Chris Homrock took a second look at the details of the case that he ran across the statement for the first time and noticed that, while he may have lied about what he saw, Lloyd Welsh looked a hell of a lot like their second police sketch. Not sure what to make of it all just yet, Sergeant Homrock thought, at the very minimum, Lloyd may have witnessed the crime, especially after he described a limp that matched with the suspect, Raymond Molesky. Unsure which man was truly their suspect, but wanting to cross all their T's, detectives working the cold case planned a new interview strategy and brought Lloyd Welsh in on October 16, 2013. Though initially worried he would remain tight-lipped, Lloyd spent the first day of interviews speaking for hours, and at some point during his rambling, he inadvertently revealed some truths that, according to the police, would only be known by someone involved in the case. Things got even worse for him when they spoke with his cousin, Henry Parker, who told police in 2014 that, back in 1975, he met Lloyd on a property in Thaxton, Virginia, and helped him remove two army-style duffel bags from his vehicle that, allegedly, weighed about 60 to 70 pounds and smelled like, quote, death. Bags that were also covered in red stains and thrown into a fire without Henry ever knowing the contents. Officially a person of interest in February of 2014, that September, the police searched the woods in Thaxton and entered a home in Hyattsville, Maryland, Lloyd's parents' home where he was living in the basement, where they seized several items of interest. Though too degraded to trace any DNA, one room in that basement had significant evidence of blood that, according to one of the detectives, looked as if someone was, quote, slaughtered inside. A year later, still serving a sentence in Delaware for child molestation, Lloyd Welsh was indicted for first-degree felony murder for his alleged involvement in the case of Catherine and Sheila Lyons and charged with abduction with the intent to defile. The girls' bodies remained hidden, and had he gone to trial, his case would have been the longest time to have ever elapsed between a murder and trial in a bodiless murder conviction. Instead, however, Lloyd Welsh, now 60 years old, pleaded guilty in September of 2017 to two counts of first-degree murder and admitted to abducting the sisters. Though he did not admit directly to killing either girl, he was held accountable for their deaths, quote, in the commission of abduction with intent to defile. He received two 48-year sentences to be served concurrently once he finished his Delaware sentence. He will likely never see life outside of prison walls. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on March 26th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there is always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.